From URL Media, I'm Mitra Kalita.
And I'm Sarah Lomax, and this is Twice as Good. Today, we're discussing Ramadan, the holy month of fasting for Muslims, with a special guest who's at the center of Muslim internet culture. We'll be diving into spiritual growth and digital coverage with Amir Al-Khattabi, the founder and editor-in-chief of the news site Muslim.co. Amir, welcome, and Ramadan Mubarak.
Thank you guys so much. Ramadan Kareem. Appreciate it.
Amir, I want to just kick things off because there might be a lot of people in our universe that aren't familiar with Ramadan, aren't familiar with Muslim.co. And we want to hear a bit about your backstory, what led you to start Muslim.co, and how you are covering and how you're experiencing Ramadan this season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. So my name is Amir Al-Khattabi. I'm the founder and editor-in-chief of Muslim. What Muslim is, we're a newsroom, we're a media house, a production studio, and we're trying to develop actually a training institute. And we're very committed in delivering independent news coverage and creating dynamic media. So we're producing authentic content and developing journalistic talent to genuinely represent inclusive and diverse perspectives. So we're doing this all, you know, at the end of the day to amplify Muslim voices. Most of the times when we see coverage of the Muslim community, Muslims are not inserted in those conversations and we're often left out and neglected. So Muslim is becoming that epicenter where we can gather and have all the stories told by Muslims for the Muslim community. And while doing so, we're also dismantling a lot of negative stereotypes and tropes and just taking in charge of the narrative here. Ramadan has been like, every year, our big peak period in traffic. During Ramadan, for those who are not familiar, Muslims have to fast from sunrise to sunset. And that includes fasting from water, from food, fasting from even like pleasures such as like music or even like cursing. And we have to do that from sunrise to sunset. And because of that, a lot of people are also fasting from things that deter them away from our faith. So distractions may look like video games or even like music or even Netflix. And due to people fasting from those things, they want to consume Muslim content. So during the month of Ramadan, we have a huge peak of traffic and engagement because a lot of people want to just digest Muslim and Islamic content, and we're able to provide that for them. We actually plan Ramadan 6 months in advance because that's how big the traffic period is for us. Last Ramadan, we grew 1 million followers on our Instagram, and that's not even including like our TikTok or other social media platforms. But what's also most important during the month of Ramadan is a lot of Muslims are trying to, you know, rejuvenate their faith while also give back to the community. So we have a concept called zakat, where we have to give a portion of our salary and our income to our community or to people in need. So during the month of Ramadan, because our rewards are amplified, a lot of people wait until Ramadan to be donating and giving back to their communities. So Ramadan is kind of like a very epicenter 30-day period for our community. We're trying not to be violent. We're not trying to like do anything that's going to steer us off course, whether that's, you know, indulging on all of these daily pleasures, as I mentioned before. So.
And Sarah, I think it's worth noting, I actually encountered Amir a few years ago because my college alumni magazine, Rutgers University, did a feature on alums that have started new media outlets. And Amir and I were both featured, but we didn't know each other at the time. And so, Amir, I don't know if you remember, but I reached out and I haven't stopped emailing you ever since. Because the rise that you describe of Muslim.co is just, it's been meteoric even since that article. And it's been really, I mean, I just want to say, like, personally, it's been wonderful to watch you grow over the last few years. I mean, both you as an entrepreneur and then the site, which has come to mean so much to so many, I think even beyond Ramadan. And so, I mean, maybe that pivots us a little bit that this year Ramadan is happening, you know, 6 months after the Israeli assault on Gaza. Your site has been such a source of news for many of us. I'm wondering if we could just zoom out a little bit and talk about the global Muslim community and how you've been handling both the coverage of this story, but also a very difficult story that is so loaded with so much grief and how you're handling that.
Absolutely. Well, first, thank you so much for the kind words. I really appreciate it. Well, first and foremost, you know, we have grown very significantly. We're growing at a very fast pace, right? And we just turned 5 years old on February 15th. So we're literally still skin in the game, brand new. We don't really have tenure. And we're just getting to a point of like financial stability where we're starting to be like, okay, maybe we could start hiring people. But everything is just happening so fast. Our growth is happening so fast. But the reason why that is because there's a need for this, right? There's a need for a platform that covers Muslim news for us to stay informed that is devoted to the Muslim community, because we have this distrust with mainstream media, with how they treat Muslims, how they cover Muslims. And it goes to show with how they're covering Palestinians in Gaza, quite frankly. So we play a very pivotal role in the global Muslim community here to ensure authentic storytelling, to ensure that we're documenting truth over biases and personal governmental agendas, right? So we at Muslim, what we do is we work with a lot of on the ground Palestinians to document what is going on there. Because quite frankly, mainstream media, like you will not see CNN documenting and posting a Palestinian's perspective on this assault in Gaza. So we work with a lot of different people on the ground. Actually, like we have been connected with Motaz even before, you know, Motaz Aziza, way before this current assault from October 7th, you know, because back in 2021, you know, again, this is a repeated pattern, right? This assault in Gaza in 2021 during Sheikh Jarrah in May, also during the time of Ramadan, there is aggression at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and there's aggression at the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, and a lot of settlers were storming and, you know, stealing land from Palestinians. So, you know, in retaliation, like Israel sent rockets to Gaza. So Gaza had always been, you know, the brunt of anything that has to do with Palestinians, you know, rights and resistance and right to their land. So we've been connected with all these different people since 2021, and we've always stayed in contact with these different people. So of course, when it was announced, this assault on Gaza, and after October 7th, we immediately just went to action. We're like, okay, guys, what's going on? What's going on the ground? We're going to collaborate posts. We're going to give you our platform. We're going to like make sure we're sent through these stories, you know? And we've spearheaded a lot of like trending news stories and coverage, even like breaking news, just because, again, mainstream media is like so put in a bubble that they are neglecting the Palestinian perspective, that when they see something is going viral, because the Muslim community, we are amplifying, we're pushing, we're very passionate, we're very human. And that's like what makes Muslim community so different. And I actually feel like the Muslim community gets exploited by publications like New York Post or Daily Mail, because they know that the Muslim community is very reactionary. They know that the Muslim community is very human. So when you see headlines calling like the most blasphemous, like Islamophobic headlines, or, you know, calling Palestinians like barbarians, you know, and animals, like the Wall Street Journal, we're going to get reactionary. So whenever we see like a video of like what's going on in Palestine, if Palestinians are documenting what's going on the ground, Muslims, just in our inherent self, it's ingrained within our faith, the concept of ummah, which is like, no matter where you are in the world, we're all connected. We're all brothers and sisters. So whether that's like you're in Sudan, whether you're in Palestine, whether you're in, you know, Somalia, Egypt, anywhere across the world, like you're my brother and sister. If something's happening to you and you're facing injustice, we all feel that. We're all connected in that way. I think it's a beautiful concept in our religion. But because of that, we spearhead a lot of virality and groundbreaking storytelling, because when we're uncovering something that's new, our community is the first to push, amplify, make it viral. And then the mainstream media is like picking up the pieces, because they're like, oh my God, everybody on social media is talking about this. So now we have to talk about it, right? Because like, what is it going to look like for CNN and New York Times to not talk about what's going on when everybody on social media is talking about it? They're just going to like turn a blind eye, because it's going to be quite obvious. So we kind of applied that pressure for our community in that sense in the news sphere.
Let me ask you, Amir, because I'm wondering, you talked about that you all are really embedded in Palestine and covering Gaza on the ground. I'm curious, like, how you are covering the U.S. Islamic community's reaction and engagement and involvement in this conflict, this war against Gaza. And what are the stories that you're telling at Muslim.co that aren't really being told from the U.S. perspective? Because like, I'm seeing a lot of clapback or just pushback against Palestinian students where they are being silenced or censored their work. And this whole conversation about anti-Semitism and Palestinian liberation, and can those two things be held, or can Palestinian liberation be held in at the same time that it is being perceived as being anti-Semitism? So can you like dive into that a little bit about how you all are covering this?
Well, what people fail to realize, again, like I brought up the concept of ummah, right? How every Muslim is connected, regardless of what the issue is across the world, because that's just how we see. If we know that a Muslim brother is in need or in help or facing injustice across the world, we are all connected. So, of course, like what's going on in Gaza is affecting the Muslim community in the United States. It's amplified and seen by how we're going about it, right? We're in the streets, we're rallying, we're organizing. We pivoted in becoming such people that are coordinated with like different intersectional movements just so we can get, so we can spearhead just noise, so people can like have all eyes and attention on what's going on in Palestine, because quite frankly, we're already disadvantaged. I'm also Palestinian myself, right? So this like also like is like hurting me in my soul, and I feel like the need of like stepping forward and stepping through, but Palestinians are disadvantaged. They have everything against them. Like look, like they don't have an army, they don't have anything, you know, like they are literally just civilians getting killed. You know, we're talking about over 20,000 children so far, almost 20,000 children so far, over 30,000 killed. So it's just like we're already disadvantaged on all fronts. And then on top of it, we have the Zionist community trying to reframe the narrative into being like, we are the victims here. When it's like, on top of, you know, being silenced and literally killed, we have to go up against, you know, multi-million dollar, billion dollar think tanks and agencies and movements to try to like spread disinformation and to shut down our voices when we're already being like silenced and censored as is. And so we're kind of doing a lot in disrupting that by covering these stories. What we did at Muslim actually is we coordinate a lot. Well, we don't coordinate with organizers, but we always are aware and know when national marches and rallies and movements occur. There's a lot of organizations like AMP Palestine, Wool Palestine, that have been organizing very nationwide protests, and they do it across the United States. So what we do is when we know like the date, we ask our following, hey, are you attending a demonstration today? Are you attending a rally today? Submit your videos and tell us your location of where you're demonstrating today. And we literally have to filter through hundreds, even thousands of emails of people submitting to us videos, photos, where they're at, location. So we compiled all of this and we uploaded onto Muslim to showcase, like, listen, like we are in the streets. We're talking a million on the London protests, 500,000 in Washington, D.C. We're all outside. Like, this is not something that we're going to let fly by. And look, we are entering over 6 months of this aggression, and we are still pushing and fighting. We're not going anywhere. We're not going silent tomorrow. And in fact, Ramadan is amplifying our efforts, and now we are even being more vocal. So what we do is we cover a lot on the grounds, what's going on, how it affects the Muslim community here in the state of New Jersey. We do a lot of also hyperlocal news coverage in the state of New Jersey. We have an imam that literally had over 20, even 30 members of his family killed in Gaza, right? And he's a very prominent imam here in the state of New Jersey, Imam Katanani. And that's the thing, like in New Jersey alone, we have a whole entire district called Palestine Way in Paterson, New Jersey. Like, we are talking about literal people having family members, even like as close as their parents or, you know, their cousins, their distant relatives being killed because of this aggression. And the United States, quite frankly, does not care about the American citizens or like Palestinian Americans and how this is affecting them in their hometowns, in their home country.
I think that segues us to the political dimensions here, which, you know, I'll say, speaking as a publisher in Jackson Heights of Epicenter, you know, in our 3 years of our existence, every iftar that I've attended, a politician is sure to be there. It really, in New York City, because especially the large growing Bangladeshi community, the iftar has kind of become a politician's must do, right? I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the politicization, you know, historically of this holiday, but also how do we think it's going to go down this year? Because I knew we were going to meet with you. I looked quickly to see, is the White House doing an iftar this year? Is Eric Adams in New York City doing, like, and I didn't see anything, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. I'm just trying to get a gut check on you. That is this current moment shifting the we got to be seen with these people, right?
No, absolutely. Actually, our community is very anti and against this right now more than ever. There are a lot of movements even happening where we're mobilizing local communities to even abandon Biden, right? Like in the ballot. I mean, the Muslim community just feels so left out in this election, right? Biden, it does not resonate with us, and Trump imposed a Muslim travel ban, right? So we are talking about two evils, and we can't choose the lesser of both evils because, like, look, at one end, they're literally killing our people. On the other end, they're trying to, like, restrict us and even, like, kill us in different ways. So there are so many campaigns happening where people are advocating to not even vote, or when you vote, you go and you abstain. You literally put a write-in, like abandon Biden, Palestine, you put anything in just to like signify. And when you look at what happened in Michigan, over 100,000 people showed up in the ballot box and they literally abstained, right? And that's a turnover state for the Democratic Party. So right now, I feel like Muslims are more mobilized more than ever to stay clear and stay aware from like politicians that don't have the interests of the Muslim community. And it's actually quite sad. You know, you mentioned like Queens and the Bangladeshi community. And what's really upsetting is a lot of these politicians take advantage of our communities because a lot of them are predominantly like migrants, right? So like, especially in Queens, like you have like a lot of migrants like in these spaces of worship, just because that's where they find community, where they can like gather, especially when they're coming into this country. So when you have facilitators and leaders that are responsible for these communities and migrants like going to these spaces, you have politicians that exploit that because, you know, our community, like migrants don't know why are you here? You know, we also like feel a sense of like, okay, we are obligated to like serve you and have you come to and enter our spaces because like we might be at risk of our living or our wages or like something is, you know, at stake here. So I feel like a lot of politicians like misuse and take advantage of us at times, but then those that are very aware hold those politicians accountable and would reject them. I feel like the Muslim community has a big history of like allowing politicians into mosques. I'm very opposed to that, but I think it comes from like a lack of like anxiety of like what happens if we don't, especially after 9/11. Like I was born in 1998, right? So I don't know 9/11. I'm a Jersey boy, but like I never witnessed, I don't have a physical memory of 9/11, you know, and I'm a Jersey boy, a Jersey Muslim boy. But that affected me so much, and it even affected all my community, affected the mosque. Like we have a huge surge of surveillance in our Muslim communities and all these different mosques. And again, it's a part of like being like, okay, we have to submit, we have to adhere to these government entities and agencies into our spaces of worship because we don't know what's going to happen if we don't.
You know, Amir, I haven't thought about it that way, and I'm really grateful for that perspective. I covered Muslims after 9/11, actually. And it was, you know, pretty known if you didn't know somebody who suddenly came into your community or your mosque, that it was potential surveillance, that, you know, people were very mistrustful. I never thought about this action of now politicians kind of aligning themselves for convenience, right? Like this is a voter block, this is a new community. And I haven't thought about it in quite that way. So I'm actually even rethinking whether the community in New York City will respond differently. And maybe that's why we're not seeing, you know, some of the politically loaded iftars, if you will, right? And you know what I mean? It's like person after person taking the microphone.
Amir, can I ask you a question? Because I'm wondering, is there anything, we're about 7 months away from the presidential election. Is there anything that could happen between now and then that would change the sentiments of the Muslim community or the folks that you're in community with around, you know, abstaining or writing in or just like not voting?
I mean, the simple resolution would be like a ceasefire and to not kill Palestinians. Like that's like a good start. But I feel like even after a ceasefire is like passed and a resolution is passed, like what, like after 6 months, right? So I feel like there's just like a lot of mistrust in our community that I feel like there's no coming back from this. And it just really is unfortunate because unless there's a candidate that's out there that actually respects the Muslim vote and respects the wishes of like the Muslim American citizens, then like I feel like that's when our community is going to feel comfort and safe again. And I feel like this is a very drastic time that's even like worse than Trump. Like, you know, when we had him in office, when it was every single day, it was like, okay, what's going on, you know, in terms of like the Muslim travel ban? What is he enforcing? What Islamophobic? Now he's, you know, running under the guise of, oh, we're going to do a jihad watch, right? Like, what the hell is that about, you know? So it's like very unfortunate that like during this time, like we chose the lesser of two evils. We chose Biden. We elected Biden into office, and we just feel like we're stabbed in the back here. At least this is coming from me, right? I'm Palestinian, you know, Muslim American, but I feel this sentiment resonates with a lot of Muslim Americans in this current climate and election cycle.
I actually wanted to ask a question. You mentioned intersectionality earlier, and my other work is in Philadelphia at a Black talk radio station, WURD. And Philadelphia has one of the largest Black Muslim communities in the country. And so I'm curious, I'm always curious about how kind of the Black Muslim community is integrated, embraced, connected with kind of this, the I guess, global Muslim community. And are there, in terms of Muslim.co, do you have a sizable Black Muslim audience that is a part of your community?
Well, I mean, I just have to say, like, without the Black Muslim community, a Muslim would actually not exist. I always go back to, like, the time of, like, Malcolm X and even, like, the Nation of Islam. There is the first ever Muslim publication in the United States. It was called Muhammad
Speaks. Final Call?
Final Call. It derived from Muhammad Speaks.
But, like, oh, Muhammad Speaks. Yeah, I remember Muhammad Speaks. Yeah, my parents used to read Muhammad Speaks.
Yeah, so it was actually very pivotal because Muhammad Speaks played a pivotal role in connecting our Muslim community in the United States, and it was centered around Black liberation. You know, they did the groundbreaking interview with Angela Davis when she got out of prison. And so when they did the interview, they asked her like the iconic question, like, are you communist? You know, and then that was spearheaded and picked up by like the New York Times. But Angela Davis felt the need to, you know, I'm out of prison, I'm going to speak to Muhammad Speaks. I'm not going to speak to any other publication because of that trust and that safety net. But most importantly, Muhammad Speaks connected all of us. It connected the Black community, it connected Muslims, it connected even, you know, till this day, I look back at the old archives from the 60s and 70s, and they have a whole entire column devoted to Palestine. They have a whole column devoted to Native American rights. They even have a whole column through Cuba and like human rights, or even the Young Lords, right? So I look back at it and I'm like, wow, like this is a pivotal publication that connects and unites us. And how I came to launching Muslim is because I feel like this needs to come back. You know, we're always talking about how we need to come together, how we need to build community. And I always was just inspired by Muhammad Speaks. And I'm like, we need to do something on a global scale that unites the Muslim community. With that being said, you know, we are so integrated in the injustices we face in the United States. Quite frankly, actually, like the Palestinian liberation and Black liberations, Black Lives Matter, intersect in so many ways. Like, I'll never forget when what's happening in Black Lives Matter, or even in Ferguson or in George Floyd, all these different protests happening in the United States, when the police would tear gas protesters. They would reach out to Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, and they would, you know, Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza would advise the protesters on how to face tear gases or an assault from police forces, because quite frankly, like the NYPD gets their trainings from the IDF. So all of our struggles are interconnected. So when I talk about intersectionality, I talk about like all of the injustices, in fact, all of us, you know, whether you're Black, white, whatever you whatever injustice you face, like, Muslim is there to make sure that we are connected, because it also affects the Muslim community as well. Like quite frankly, it's affecting Black Muslims, and we serve that population with our publication. We make sure that they're on the forefront. We do have a sizable audience. To be honest, I don't have a good breakdown of the ethnicity of like our audience, but we do a lot with the Black Muslim community in particular by highlighting them and doing different series and different things to have their perspectives heard. And I know the Philadelphia Muslim community is very vast and very fun and colorful crowd. So even in Newark, New Jersey has a really, really heavy like Black Muslim influence and culture and deep history in the Black liberation movement. And I'm very happy to be a proud of the city. And yeah.
Amir, is there anything on a personal level you want to share about your own relationship with fasting, how this year might be different than years past, any intentions that you've set?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. This Ramadan is so heavy, and I feel like every Muslim feels the same way. It's kind of like the sense of like hopelessness and like, wow, like, I can't believe like we're, you know, doing Ramadan and we're feeling some type of way because we're fasting from literally everything, but then we resonate so much with Palestinians, which they're fasting every single day, but against their choice, right? Like they don't have the choice to like not fast because they are scarce of like food. They're scarce from even internet, electricity, from like daily pleasures. So right now, I feel like this Ramadan is very different because we're reflecting a lot on what's going on in Gaza. Even for me, like I actually shouldn't be fasting. I should be I have medication I have to take and that exempts me from fasting. But to be honest, like I'm in the headspace and mindset of being like, who am I to like not fast? I'm 25 years old. I'm healthy, you know, like, oh, like I have to take like some medication in the morning. But it's like we have Palestinians that are like literally like suffering. So I'm like, who am I to like not fast and be part of this experience? And I think a lot of different Muslims are feeling the same exact way this Ramadan. So it's definitely like a time where we're trying to find a collective way to come together. And during Ramadan actually is like a peak period where people are donating. A lot of people like save their money and wait until Ramadan to donate because it, you know, exemplifies our reward with our faith. So during the time of Ramadan, there's so many campaigns happening. People start so much. They do so much initiatives for Palestine. So they're definitely on the forefront this Ramadan. And yeah, my reflections are we need to come together now more than ever. And I feel like this Ramadan is that feeling. Like I know I was talking to actually our team yesterday at the studio. We're based in Jersey City, so we have a Muslim studio. And I was talking to everybody and everyone was just, I was like, oh, how's everyone's first night of Ramadan, and everyone was like, it just does not feel like Ramadan. And I think that's just like the collective like feeling that everyone is feeling, where we're all like, yeah, it does not feel like Ramadan at all this year.
I would say I was out in Jackson Heights last night, usually the first night, you know, and as you get closer to Eid, it's festive, right? There's boxes on the streets. It's there, you know, like there's henna artists. There's so much that I love living here. Even as I don't fast, I benefit from it immensely because it's like $5 iftar boxes, right? I didn't really see a lot of celebration and I was struck by that. And I don't know if it'll shift, right? But I definitely have that sense that you're describing.
In our faith, it is said that like during our Eid, we have to celebrate.
Just explain what Eid is and iftar is, because there are a lot of people who might not know.
So when we wake up for sunrise, we have a meal before sunrise, because sunrise marks Fajr and the start of our fasting. But right before sunrise, right now it's around 5:50 a.m. So we're talking about like around like 5 a.m. to 5:30 a.m. We have a meal called Sahur, which is practically breakfast, but we're just doing it really early on. And then after we have that breakfast, we set our intentions for prayer, we pray, and then we either nap or get to work. And then from sunrise, which is, you know, roughly around like 6 a.m. or 5:50 a.m. all the way till 7 p.m., which is sunset, we have iftar, where we break our fast. And that's like our dinner, right? So we're going the entire day without food, water, music, whatever people like are personally like fasting away from as well. Because people can say something as like, oh, I'm fasting away from like smoke, or I'm fasting away from drinking, or whatever that may be. So they also do their personal goals in the month of Ramadan. So we break our fast for iftar as well. Yeah.
And just Sarah, on that note, like in areas like my neighborhood that it's two populations. One, a lot of Muslims live here, but a lot of Muslims also work here. We have more restaurant workers, for example, than any other neighborhood in New York City. And so it just from a business perspective, it just changes the entire atmosphere, because suddenly our hours are mirroring the hours of people who are fasting, even if you're not Muslim. So you kind of know for restaurants and their hours and things like that, which again, you know, I think is you know, largely lovely because they have specials and all sorts of other.
I love it. I know so many different like cafes, they stay up to like 3 a.m. even, because like we just want something to do. We're not going to go out to clubs. Like, you know, we're not, so we don't have a space of ourselves. And at nighttime, we want to like just have coffee, hang out, chill. So all these different like Muslim cafes are opening till 3 a.m. And I feel like that's my festivities, where I'm like, oh, I feel home and centered in community.
I would just ask as a final question, Amir, you know, given the heaviness that you described of this particular Ramadan, given what's happening in Gaza, what's the one thing that you want to share in terms of whether it's about Ramadan's impact or just about what you're doing with Muslim.co that our audience can kind of take away from this conversation?
Absolutely. One takeaway I would say is to make sure that you're following media sources very closely. Oftentimes we have spent our entire lives developing this relationship with our mainstream media outlets, whether that's CNN or whatever outlet you choose. But in specific times like this, where, you know, you're seeing a lot of like outcry of people being like, oh, like this media outlet is not recovering this, you know, entirely, or it's not like centering like the voices of the people involved. I feel like now is more of a time to understand media justice and follow media outlets that you align with. I feel like Muslim aligns with a lot of Muslims, but also people that just want to stay informed on what's impacting the Muslim community. And I think that's really beautiful. So I personally would want to follow Palestinians on the grounds in Gaza, because I feel like that's authentic. And so that's kind of like what we're doing at Muslim, making sure we're centering authentic storytelling. And I think we just collectively have to shift how we view media and mainstream media. And there's a reason why there's a lot of different people that are being more vocalized now more than ever. And all these new platforms and independent media outlets are existing and coming to fruition during this time.
Well, thank you so much. And congratulations on Muslim.co. It's an amazing outlet and so needed.
Yeah. And we also just want to, in addition to the congratulations, this is really bittersweet. We want to offer our condolences. Your people are our people. I mean, that's really the takeaway, I think, from this conversation. And we're thinking of you all month, and we're thinking of you really all year long.
And that's Twice as Good. For independent news from our 29 outlets, visit our website, url-media.com. You can watch the video version of this podcast on our YouTube channel as well. Subscribe for future episodes, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.